Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we're going to pick back up with reading the ELM. We're going to get through the rest of the 600s, or at least that is my plan. I came home all fired up, ready to do this episode, because there's good stuff in the rest of these 600s, stuff that I found really interesting, stuff that I wasn't expecting to be interesting, and I want to tell you guys about it. But first, I want to give a shout out to a few of my listeners who sent me suggestions on other podcasts based on my leadership episode. There are a few branches that are doing podcasts. Well, there's at least one other branch besides the one who does Delivering Solidarity. There is a podcast for NALC Branch 458, which is in Oklahoma. And so I went and listened to those and listened to every single one of their episodes while I was on a hike with Annie. And it's good stuff. They essentially read their newsletter on the podcast and then talk about some other stuff as well. And that's exactly what I was talking about in my leadership episode. So that's proof that that can absolutely be done. But while I was listening to the Branch 458 episode or podcast, the host mentioned somebody who helped him to start that podcast, and it was the president of the Colorado State Association of Letter Carriers, and they have their own podcast called the Bipartisan Buzz. And I turned that one on, and I'm in the middle of binging that now. And guys, this dude, it's like, you know, he's been doing this for a while, probably close to a year. And it's like he listened to my leadership episode and then went back in time and recorded a podcast that addresses exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, he talked about how the newsletters don't reach everybody, and so you have to reach carriers where they are. And his state association in Colorado does Zoom calls every Thursday morning. And he says, whether you're in Colorado or outside of Colorado, you're welcome to come onto these Zoom calls and learn something. So yes, it absolutely can be done. And it is being done by at least two branches now that I know of, and the Colorado State Association of Letter Carriers. So kudos to them. Great job doing that. And I hope that that creates some momentum and an example of what other people can and should be doing. All right, so with that said, let's get into the ELM. We're going to pick up where we left off at 660, which is conduct. 661 is statutory provisions. 661.1, laws referenced in this manual. The laws mentioned in this manual are listed for information only. Nothing in this manual constitutes an interpretation or construction of these laws, which might be construed as binding in the United States. As binding the United States Postal Service or the United States. Failure to mention a statute does not excuse any person from complying with a statute. 661.2, application to postal employees. In addition to the statutes listed in Title V, Code of Federal Regulations, and it lists the parts in here, the following statutes and regulations are applicable to all employees in the Postal Service. Now, mind you, when it says all employees, that doesn't just mean craft employees, that means management as well. So we get into the letters here under 661.2. A, prohibition against proscribed political activities. So this is like Hatch Act stuff, where you can't campaign on company time, you can't campaign on company premises, things like that. B, prohibition against appointing or promoting a relative or advocating such an appointment or promotion. So this is a rule against nepotism. And back in the olden days, like in the late 1800s, that was, even before then, that was rampant in the Postal Service. Like, that was how postmasters got their job. One day I'll probably do a postal history episode and we'll talk about stuff like that. But there is a really cool book. It's available in audiobook, which is how I read it, and it's the history of the Postal Service. It's like how the post office built America or something like that, and it talks about all that stuff. It's really interesting. All right, C, prohibition against disloyalty and striking. So we are prohibited from striking, and that is a matter of federal law. It's not just that it's in our contract, which it is in our contract that we cannot strike. There is also federal law against it. D, prohibition against bribery, graft, and conflicts of interest. E, prohibition against acting as the agent for a foreign principal registered under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. F, prohibition against unauthorized taking or use of documents relating to claims against or by the government. G, prohibition against postal employees becoming interested in any contract for carrying the mail. H, prohibition against counterfeiting and forging transportation requests. I, prohibition against deprivation of employment or other benefit for political activity. So if management doesn't like that you're advocating for a particular candidate, they cannot deprive you of employment or punish you because of that political stance. J, prohibition against 1, embezzlement of government money or property, 2, failing to account for public money, 3, embezzlement of money or property of another person in the possession of an employee by reason of his or her employment. K, prohibition against 1, disclosure of classified information, and 2, disclosure of confidential information. So that's something that I worry about a little bit with reading all these manuals and going through this stuff is, am I disclosing confidential information? And the answer to that must clearly be no, because when I go to the ELM, it's on the USPS website, and I don't have to put in any credential or anything to get to the ELM. It is publicly available. And so there's no way that that's confidential. L, prohibition against fraud or false statements in a government matter. M, prohibition against participation in lottery enterprises. N, prohibition against carriage of mail contrary to law. O, prohibition against desertion of mail. And again, that should apply to all employees, whether they are craft or management. P, prohibition against obstruction of correspondence. Q, prohibition against delay or destruction of mail or newspapers. So this is why you shouldn't put, you know, you have to be careful about what you put into the UBM, the undeliverable bulk business mail, because that mail is going to get destroyed. And if you put something that doesn't belong in there, then you're violating this law. It's 18 U.S.C. 1703. R, prohibition against theft of property. S, prohibition against theft of mail. T, or that was S. T, prohibition against theft of newspapers. U, prohibition against misappropriation of postal service funds. V, prohibition against falsification of postal returns. I don't know what a postal return is. It's in 18 U.S.C. 1712. It's not worth looking up. It's probably something that I'm never going to do, even accidentally. W, prohibition against improper issuance of money orders. X, prohibition against misuse of the franking privilege. So franking, if you're not familiar with franked mail, it's when like a member of Congress can use the Postal Service and the government pays for it. All they have to do is write their name up in the corner. So it'll say like from the office of U.S. Senator, you know, whoever. And that's what franking is. And it is a privilege that certain members of the government are allotted. And yeah, it has to be used properly. Like they probably can't use that to send out campaign materials either. Surely they can't, otherwise they would absolutely do it. Y, prohibition against the unlawful sale or pledge of stamps. Z, prohibition against unlawful collection of postage. And there's still more rules here. What happens when you go past Z? Well, they start repeating. So next is AA, prohibition against improper approval of bond or sureties. B, prohibition against lobbying with appropriated funds. Or I'm sorry, that's AB. AC, prohibition against the use of deceit in an examination or personnel action in connection with government employment. So this one I might actually be guilty of. Quick story here. When I applied for the post office, my buddy Trevor gave me a book. Back in the day, we used to have to actually take this big postal exam. And so it was the civil service exam. A lot of you, most of you probably took it unless you're a newer CCA, where they ask you all these questions about like, do you think it's okay to steal from your boss? Do you think it's okay to take things from your job? Do you think it's okay to go home with stuff from your work? You know, they'll ask you the same question in a bunch of different ways. But then there's also this practical part of the test where you have to work with addresses. And so you'll see this address range and all these streets like 501 to 599 Elm Street goes in Block B. and 820 or 800 through 899 Jackson Street goes in Block D and whatever it is. And so I'm going through this practice exam and developing strategies and learning how to memorize. And one of the things I noticed when I was taking my practice test is I could do the sorting no problem. I could find out, you know, figure out what range that goes in. Like, it's not complicated. But there's memorization. And so I knew that I was going to be working with these for a while, and then there would come a point in the test where I would then have to do the sorting from memory. And back then, these tests were proctored. And so there was a person there, like, watching and making sure that, you know, we're not doing anything inappropriate. And so I knew when I got to this part of the test that I was going to struggle, because I could remember all the different sortations. But once I started working with it, I realized, like, after I answered the first few questions, the stuff that I hadn't, that I wasn't immediately working with, would kind of drift away. And so here's what I did. We were given like 5 minutes to just study and memorize this sortation. And then we had to put our pencils down, we turn the page, and there's a big blank page, and then the test continues on the page after that. And so the proctor gets us ready, and he says, okay, you can pick up your pencils and begin. And as soon as I picked up that pencil, I went to that blank page, and I wrote down every single address range, and then I just used that as my reference as I went through that section of the test. I don't think that's the way you're supposed to do that part of the test, but I only picked up my pencil when I was allowed, and I passed the test, and here I am. So it wasn't specifically prohibited, so maybe I'm okay. Maybe I'm not going to go in to jail because of a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1917. Yeah. All right, A.D., prohibition against mutilating or destroying a public record. A.E., prohibition against disclosure of lists of names and addresses. A.F., prohibition against making or receiving political recommendations for appointment or promotion. A.G., prohibition against receipt of unauthorized fees. A.H., prohibition against opening first-class mail. A.I., oath of office required for all postal employees. And finally, A.J., Privacy Act of 1974. Next, we move on to 662, Federal Standards of Ethical Conduct. 662.1, publication. To ensure that every citizen can have complete confidence in the integrity of the federal government, each federal employee, including each postal employee, must respect and adhere to the principles of ethical conduct set forth in 5 CFR 2630, well, a series of regulations. 662.11, ethics advice. Employees who have questions about the application of ethics regulations to particular situations should seek advice from an agency ethics official. Disciplinary action for violating these regulations will not be taken against an employee who is engaged in conduct in good faith reliance upon the advice of an agency ethics official, provided that the employee has made full disclosure of all relevant circumstances in seeking such advice. I'll interrupt myself here. That might be something that if I'd have known these rules existed, I might have considered doing that before I started this podcast, just to make sure that it wasn't going to violate any ethical rules. This matter has since been adjudicated. It went all the way to the national level, and I'm in the clear, but it's good to know that these avenues exist. All right, moving on. In any investigations of or actions against employees in their individual capacities, employees are not protected by the attorney-client privilege and may not assert in that context that such privilege prevents disclosure of their communications made to agency ethics officials or attorneys. An agency ethics official is required by 28 U.S.C. 535 to report any information he or she receives relating to a violation of the criminal code. So if you are going to call about ethics, you know, don't say like, hey, I just stole a whole bunch of mail and I want to see how I should handle it. Going on. However, the Postal Service may still assert the attorney-client privilege and other privileges available in the civil litigation context and or Freedom of Information Act exemptions to protect from public discourse information provided to an agency ethics attorney from an employee Ethics advice provided from an agency ethics attorney to an employee and any related documents in response to FOIA requests, that's Freedom of Information Act, news media inquiries, and other external requests for information, except when disclosure is required by law. 662.12, ethics officials. Employees who wish to obtain ethics advice in accordance with 662.11 must obtain that advice from one of the following agency ethics officials or their designees: the Postal Service General Counsel, the Chief Counsel for Ethics and Federal Requirements, the Managing Counsel for the Civil Practice Section, or the Managing Counsel for each field legal office. Inspection Service employees may also seek routine ethics advice from the Inspector in Charge, who cares about them. General employees may also seek routine ethics advice from the Office of Inspector General Counsel or designee. It might be interesting to take some of the questionable behavior of management before these ethics officials and get their take. Hey, do you think it's ethical for my supervisor to do blah, blah, blah? And, you know, they're supposed to act on this stuff if they get ethics violations brought to their attention. Next, 663, participation in political and community activities. 663.1, political activities. 663.11, general. 663.111, employees included. With the exceptions noted in part 663.112, which will come up in a moment, Postal Service employees are subject at all times to restrictions on their participation in political activities under the Hatch Act and related regulations. 663.112, employees excluded. Postal employees who are employed on an irregular or occasional basis, such as experts, substitute rural carriers, and those employees who are employed without compensation or on a when actually employed basis are subject to the restrictions mentioned in 663.111 only while in an active duty status and only for the entire 24 hours of a day of actual employment. Notwithstanding this paragraph, full-time employees in a leave status and part-time employees are fully subject to the restrictions of 663.111. Next, 663.113, nonpartisan office. An employee may seek, accept, or hold a nonpartisan federal, state, or local office subject to the provisions of this code and this section. So if you want to run for office while you're employed at the Postal Service, it has to be a nonpartisan office. A nonpartisan office is one filled as a result of a nonpartisan election. A nonpartisan election is an election in which none of the candidates to be nominated or elected represent a political party whose candidates for presidential elector received votes in the last preceding election held to select presidential electors. And there's a bunch more rules here, so if you're thinking about running for office, make sure you read Section 663. 664, bribery, undue influence, or coercion. An employee must report immediately to the Office of the Inspector General: A, any instance in which a person either within or outside the Postal Service uses or attempts to use bribery, undue influence, or coercion to induce or attempt to induce the employee to act or neglect to act in regard to official responsibilities. So this may apply, like if management tries to coerce you to break the rules, right? You can bring them up under this, you know, or at least cite this in your complaint that, hey, they're trying to get me, you know, they're using coercion, they're threatening my job, they're threatening me with discipline to get me to do this thing that is unethical. And B, any information that causes the employee to believe that there has been a violation of a federal criminal statute or any law or regulation directly or indirectly related to the responsibility of the Postal Service. Next, 665, Postal Service Standards of Conduct. 665.1, General Expectations. 665.11, Loyalty. Employees are expected to be loyal to the United States government and uphold the policies and regulations of the Postal Service. So remember, we took that oath of office when we got hired, and we are expected to abide by that. 665.12, Performance of Public Duties. Employees are expected to serve on juries and to act as witnesses when summoned by official sources. So this one goes right in line with the post office's obligation to pay us for court leave, right? We are mandated to go to court when we're supposed to, and so the post office, for its part, will pay us when we go to court, And I know there were some exceptions in there for CCAs, but generally you're going to get court leave if you have to go to court. Although, well, if you need more information on that, there's no reason to rehash it here. You can go back to the section on court leave. You know, that's one of the beauties of this podcast is that you can just go back to that episode and listen to the whole thing. And I've been doing that lately, that when I need a refresher on some provision, I find that episode, I download it, I listen to it again. And I hope that that's one of the uses of this podcast for people besides me. 665.13, discharge of duties. Employees are expected to discharge their assigned duties conscientiously and effectively. It's worth noting that this, again, doesn't just apply to craft employees. It applies to management as well. They're expected to discharge their duties conscientiously and effectively. I recently had my first colonoscopy, and turns out I am discharging my duties perfectly. So that was a good report. All right, 665.14, reporting violations. Allegations of violations of postal laws by postal employees, including mail theft, must be reported immediately to the Office of Inspector General. So if there's a violation of inappropriate delay of the mail, should we report that to the OIG? It seems like we should. Like, for example, my little brother lives in Columbus, Ohio, and that's one of the places that has been long-term short-staffed, at least last I heard. I really don't know what the conditions are there now, but I can tell you that my little brother has not received a single piece of mail for many days and has not seen a letter carrier, and I know that there are places in the country where whole routes are just not going out. So should this be reported to the OIG? It's possible. You know, at a minimum, report it to them, and then they can decide what they want to do about it. If your station has standard mail that gets delayed beyond the third day, if your station has first-class mail that's being delayed, if you have whole routes that aren't going out, it says right here that it must be reported immediately to the Office of the Inspector General. Boy, I bet that's a way to get some action if you're at a station where that's a problem. 665.15, obedience to orders. Employees must obey the instructions of their supervisors. If an employee has reason to question the propriety of a supervisor's order, the individual must nevertheless carry out the order and may immediately file a protest in writing to the official in charge of the installation or may appeal through official channels. All right, let's parse this a little bit. It says you do have to do what they say, but you may immediately file a protest in writing. So you'd be like, all right, I'll do it, but first, I got to go over here and write out my official protest. I mean, this does say immediately. So that's something you can do, right? Maybe you should. 665.16, behavior and personal habits. Employees are expected to conduct themselves during and outside of working hours in a manner that reflects favorably upon the Postal Service. Although it is not the policy of the Postal Service to interfere with the private lives of employees, it does require that postal employees be honest, reliable, trustworthy, courteous, and of good character and reputation. The Federal Standards of Ethical Conduct, referenced in 662.1, also contain regulations governing off-duty behavior of postal employees. Employees must not engage in criminal, dishonest, notoriously disgraceful, immoral, or other conduct prejudicial to the Postal Service. Conviction for a violation of any criminal statute may be grounds for disciplinary action against an employee, including removal of the employee, in addition to other penalty imposed pursuant to a statute. So if you wind up breaking the law and it affects the post office, then you could wind up being disciplined for that. I remember hearing about this, I think it was on From A to Arbitration, where carriers get fired for something they did that wasn't even on the job. And so the union will make the argument that this has no impact on the post office. And so it's a misapplication of that rule. And I think that's a reasonable argument. You know, if I get busted for, I don't know who knows what, for running an illegal cockfighting ring, if it didn't make the papers or if it did make the paper and it didn't say that I was a U.S. Postal Service employee, then does that really affect the Postal Service? Probably not. You know, hopefully you don't do stuff like that, and it never has to come up, but these are the things that we think about. At least these are the things that I think about. 665.2, prohibited conduct. 665.21, incomplete mail disposition. It is a criminal act for anyone who has taken charge of any mail to quit voluntarily or desert the mail before making proper disposition of the mail, according to 18 U.S.C. 1700. So there are people who quit just in the middle of the route. They just walk away. I've had enough of this shit. I'm out of here. And they could be charged criminally for deserting the mail. 665.23, discrimination. Employees acting in an official capacity must not directly or indirectly authorize, permit, or participate in any action, event, or course of conduct that subjects any person to discrimination or results in any person being discriminated against on the basis of, and here's all the things that are normally discriminated against. Well, I'll just go ahead and list them. Race, color, sex, including pregnancy, sexual orientation, or gender identity, including transgender status, national origin, religion, age, 40 or over, genetic information, disability, or retaliation for engaging in an EEO-protected activity as provided by law, or B, other non-meritorious factors such as political affiliation, marital status, status as a parent, and past, present, or future military service. So you can't be discriminated against for any of these things. 665.24, violent and or threatening behavior. All right, listen close to this one. The Postal Service is committed to the principle that all employees have a basic right to a safe and humane working environment. Humane working environment. Humane. In order to ensure this right, it is the unequivocal policy of the Postal Service that there must be no tolerance of violence or threats of violence by anyone at any level of the Postal Service. Similarly, there must be no tolerance of harassment, intimidation, threats, or bullying by anyone at any level. Violation of this policy may result in disciplinary action, including removal from the Postal Service. This provision is right in line with the joint statement on violence and behavior in the workplace. And if you find yourself in one of these situations, don't be afraid to use these provisions if you're being mistreated. That's why they're here, is to stop your supervisor from being an asshole or to protect you in those situations, right? We expect the post office to abide by its own rules. 665.25, illegal drug sale, use, or possession. The Postal Service will not tolerate the sale, possession, or use of illegal drugs or the abuse of legal drugs while on duty or on postal premises. Employees found to be engaged in these activities are subject to discipline, including removal and or criminal prosecution where appropriate. It's worth noting that it gives the caveat while on duty or on postal premises. Of course, I would advise against doing that stuff in general. You know, as Nancy Reagan famously said, just say no, but I ain't your boss. Your own life is your own life, especially when you're off duty. 665.26, intoxicating beverages. I wonder if our union president read this one. Except as provided below, employees must not drink beer, wine, or other intoxicating beverages while on duty. Begin work or return to duty intoxicated, or drink intoxicating beverages in a public place while in uniform. Sorry, Cliff Clavin, you are definitely violating this rule. Employees found to be violating this policy may be subject to disciplinary action. There's a list of exceptions after this for non-bargaining employees at official functions. So at those, it's okay to drink. Like when supervisors get together for a meeting or whatever, they can drink at those. It continues. No employee shall have or bring any container of beer or wine into any Postal Service facility or premises, whether the container has been opened or not. Intoxicating beverages other than beer and wine may never be brought into any Postal Service facility or premises under any circumstances. 665.27, gambling. Employees must not participate in any gambling activity while on duty or while on property owned or leased by the Postal Service or the United States. This prohibition includes the operation of any gambling device, conducting a game for money or property, or selling or purchasing a number slip or ticket. So here in Las Vegas, there are slot machines everywhere. They're in the grocery store. They're in convenience stores. They're in the airport. They're all over. And I used to go into 7-Eleven to refill my drinks or whatever, and I would throw a couple bucks into the video poker machine while I was in there. And I was warned by a coworker that, hey, man, you should stop doing that because you can get in trouble. And I didn't know the rules back then. I mean, I only knew this rule now, you know, as I'm reading it to prepare for this episode. So I stopped doing it back then, but here's the rule. You know, here it is in black and white that, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. Next, 665.3, cooperating in investigations. Employees must cooperate in any postal investigation, including Office of Inspector General investigations. 665.4, attendance. 665.41, requirement of regular attendance. Employees are required to be regular in attendance. Failure to be regular in attendance may result in disciplinary action, including removal from the Postal Service. Man, if there is any one provision in the ELM that you have actually heard before, it's this one. This is the provision that's always cited in attendance-related discipline, and it's comes up in the investigative interview. They'll say, you know, the ELM requires you to be regular in attendance, and here it is. It does, in fact, require you to be regular in attendance. But notice that it does not include a definition of what constitutes regular in attendance. There's whole sections of the ELM that are devoted to definitions. This one does not have a definition. So it is, by its very nature, subjective. 665.42, absence without permission. Employees who fail to report for duty on scheduled days, including Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays, are considered absent without leave, except in cases where actual emergencies prevent them from obtaining permission in advance. In emergencies, the supervisor or proper official must be notified of the inability to report as soon as possible. Satisfactory evidence of the emergency must be furnished later, and it says must. An employee who is absent without permission or who fails to provide satisfactory evidence that an actual emergency existed will be placed in a non-pay status for the period of such absence. The absence may be the basis for disciplinary action. However, once the employee provides management with notice of the need for leave in accordance with the Family and Medical Leave Act, required timeframes, and the absence is determined to be FMLA protected, the employer must change the AWOL to approve FMLA, leave without pay, and delete the AWOL status from the record. It's worth noting here that AWOL, absent without leave, and leave without pay are two very different things. Leave without pay is approved leave, you're just not getting paid for it. Absent without leave is unapproved leave, where they say you're gone for no good reason, and that's bad. All right. 665.43, tardiness. I don't think we're supposed to use that. Never mind. All right. Any employee failing to report at his or her scheduled time in installations where time recorders are not used is considered tardy. Tardiness in installations equipped with time recorders is defined as any deviation from schedule. 665.44, falsification in recording time. Recording the time for another employee constitutes falsification of a report. Any employee knowingly involved in such procedure is subject to removal or other discipline. Failure of a supervisor to report known late arrivals is regarded as condoning falsification. These practices may also result in criminal prosecution. So we know that management does this. Management absolutely falsifies employee time records. You know, where I work, I haven't seen this happening, but certainly we hear about it from all around the country. And it may be, you know, if they change your begin tour or end tour, that's egregious because that affects your pay. But any falsification can be prosecuted against management under this provision, 665.44. So does management actually get disciplined when they falsify time records? It doesn't say you may be subject to discipline. It says that anyone who does this is subject to removal or other discipline. So if management is not disciplining their own for this falsification, they are derelict in their duty. Again, you know, that typical of management, but here again is the regulation that governs it. 665.5. Furnishing address. Employees must keep the installation head informed of their correct mailing address. Oh, that is my wife. Hold on. And I'm back. All right, let's just pick up at the beginning. 6 is 5.5, furnishing address. Employees must keep the installation head informed of their current mailing address. Any change in mailing address must be reported to the installation head on PS Form 1216, employee's current mailing address, through self-service on the Postal Service Blue Page, or through USPS-approved methods, including Postalese. 665.6, disciplinary action. Postal officials may take appropriate disciplinary measures to correct violations of the regulations referred to in 665. Next, we get to section 666, the section of the beast. And this is prohibited personnel practices. And it's actually nothing particularly interesting, except that discrimination is prohibited for all the standard causes. But there is a caveat in here that I think is worth noting, 666.12c. Conduct that does not adversely impact performance. No person may be discriminated for or against on the basis of conduct that does not adversely impact that person's performance or the performance of others. So, you know, this is another one of those ones that's kind of subjective, but it's interesting. Like, maybe you have an OnlyFans page. If you do, send me the link. Anyway, does that affect your performance or the performance of others? No, of course it doesn't. And so can the post office discriminate against you for that reason? I would argue that according to this, no, they can't. You know, unless you're doing it like in uniform, then that I'm sure that violates, you know, some postal rules. But outside of that, it should not have any impact on your performance. And there are a bunch of things that you can do in your private life that while your supervisor may find it personally distasteful or personally fantastic, they're not supposed to use that in your employment. 665.15 is another one, improper recommendations. Soliciting or considering any recommendation or statement, oral or written, with respect to any individual who requests or is under consideration for any personnel action is prohibited, unless such recommendation or statement is based on the personal knowledge or records of the person furnishing it and consists of A, an evaluation of the work performance, ability, aptitude, or general qualification of such individual, and B, an evaluation of the character, loyalty, or suitability of such individual. So in the cases where you need an actual recommendation, these are the provisions that cover it. And I guess there were multiple interesting things in 666 because it goes on. 666.17, reprisal for exercising appeal rights. Taking or failing to take any personnel action as a reprisal for the exercise of any appeal right granted by law, rule, or regulation is prohibited. 666.18, release of information. A reprisal for release of information. No one may take or fail to take a personnel action or threaten to do so with respect to any employee or applicant for employment because the employee or applicant discloses information that he or she believes evidences A, a violation of any law, rule, or regulation, or B, a gross waste of funds, gross mismanagement, an abuse of authority, or a substantial and specific danger to public health or safety. So this means that you can go to the press if the post office is like totally out of control and screwing things up bad enough, and this is your protection. They can't discipline you for disclosing that information. Disclosure of information that is specifically prohibited by law does not carry the protection described above. However, no disclosure under A and B above is prohibited by law if made to the Inspector General of the Postal Service. There can be no reprisal for disclosures to the Inspector General unless the complaint was made or the information disclosed with the knowledge that it was false or with willful disregard for its truth or falsity. 666.2, remedies. Basically, this section says that if you feel management discriminated against you in one of the inappropriate ways that we just listed, you can file an Equal Employment Opportunity complaint, also an EEO complaint, or an MSPB appeal if you were in the military, or you can file a grievance. Next, 666.3, whistleblower protection. So this section is it's pretty long, but basically if you're thinking about bringing the hammer down on the Postal Service and you're afraid of retaliation, you should read this because it talks about your protections. for most of us, even somebody who's a pain in the ass like me, an actual whistleblower issue probably won't ever come up. However, there are whistleblower protections that may come up, and those are provided by OSHA. So if you report a workplace injury, for example, and then you are retaliated against, then there are OSHA protections in place for you. And this is definitely something that does come up. You know, it's standard practice at the post office that if you get injured on the job, management will also try to discipline you. And in those situations, you can file an OSHA complaint for whistleblower protection. Moving on to 667, service matters. 667.1, general service behavior. And again, these are highlights, so I'm just going to read the ones that I think are the most relevant. There's a whole list of stuff in here. 667.15, loitering. Carriers must not loiter or stop for unnecessary conversations on their routes. Employees must not linger about cases or racks after their tours of duty have ended or report at cases or racks before their tours are scheduled to begin. So no just hanging about dilly-dallying. It does say unnecessary conversation on their routes, and again, that's subjective. You know, if you talk to your customers a little bit, it's probably okay, but just hanging around, you know, chit-chatting like you're in the break room at a customer's house, that would probably be considered loitering. 667.16, controversies with the public. Employees must not engage in controversies with customers, railway employees, airline employees, or other members of the public while on duty or on federal property. And by the way, these last two about loitering and controversies, these are covered specifically in the Carrier Academy. 667.17, obstructing the mail. Title 18 U.S.C. 1701 provides penalties for persons who knowingly and willfully obstruct or retard the mail. The statute does not afford employees immunity from arrest for violations of law. Remember again that these provisions don't just apply to craft employees, they also apply to management. So when they have whole routes that don't go out, I don't see how you could call that anything but obstructing or retarding the mail. 667.2, interception of oral or wire communications by postal employees. 667.21, prohibition. During the course of activities related to postal employees may not record, monitor, or otherwise intercept the oral or wire communications of any other person through the use of any electronic, mechanical, or other device, nor listen in on a telephone conversation, nor direct another to do so unless all parties involved in the communications are made aware of and consent to such interception. So you can record at the post office if all the parties agree, but not otherwise. You are not supposed to record while you are at work. 668, legal assistance provided by the Postal Service. 668.1, representation of Postal Service employees by the Department of Justice in civil and criminal cases. 668.11, general. Under the following procedures, an employee, hereby defined to include present and former employees or their estates, may be provided representation in civil proceedings and in state criminal proceedings in which he or she is sued, subpoenaed, or charged in his or her official capacity when the actions for which representation is requested reasonably appear to have been performed within the scope of his or her employment, and providing representation would be in the interest of the United States. A provision of the Federal Tort Claims Act prohibits suits against individual government employees, including Postal Service employees, for loss, damage, or destruction of property, or personal injury, or death when caused by the negligent or wrongful act or omission of the employee while acting within the scope of his or her employment. So in law, this is called qualified immunity. And essentially what that means is while you're doing your government work, like if you're driving your mail truck and you crash into somebody, the post office can be sued, but you personally can't be sued. You're protected by qualified immunity. And it says here, even in the case of negligence or wrongful act, if you're doing your official duty, you know, you're supposed to be driving, you're driving, something bad happens, you personally don't get sued for that. Or if you do, the post office is going to defend you. Now, I'm not an attorney, you know, don't take my word for this stuff, but that's what this provision means. Qualified immunity is something that has withstood Supreme Court scrutiny. And you know what happens, like with police officers. When a police officer shoots somebody, it's the police, the police force that gets sued, not the individual police officer. So it's that same thing. It all falls under this umbrella of qualified immunity. 673, Postal Service Policy. 673.1, General Information on Policies. Postal Service Policies on Diversity, Equal Employment Opportunity, and Prevention of Employment and Workplace Harassment can be found on PolicyNet under Memorandums of Policy, MOPs. To locate MOPs, go to the Postal Service's Blue Page. I don't know what the Blue Page is. Maybe that's what light blue is now. I'm not sure. In the left-hand column under Essential Links, click PolicyNet from the drop-down menu, then click MOPs. 673.4, Policy on Workplace Harassment. The policy on workplace harassment covers A, the Postal Service's commitment to providing a work environment free of harassment, and B, management's responsibility to 1, prevent harassment, and 2, investigate complaints of harassment. So this comes up, like Corey had a great episode about this with the IMIPs. I think that's what the initialism is. Initial Management Investigation Procedure or something like that, that when an employee reports harassment, bullying, anything like that, management is supposed to do their own internal investigation. And here is backup on that policy, that management has a responsibility to prevent that and to investigate the complaints. All right, moving on. The end of the 600s, and that's where we'll finish today, 693 through 695, covers the procedures for if you come up with an invention that helps save the post office money or winds up being used by the Postal Service or something like that. Then there's all kinds of provisions that talk about like how you get paid, what the patent rules are, things like that. I really just skimmed through it because the chances of me coming up with an invention, pretty slim. If you have an invention that you come up with that you want the post office to use, you should totally read these so that you know what you're in for when you bring that invention to management. All right, and that covers it for today. My wife just got home, so I'm going to go say hello to her. And you guys, thank you very much for listening. If you hear of any other postal podcasts that you think I should listen to, let me know. And in the time since the last episode dropped, another episode of You Are the Current Resident came out. It is just an audiobook version of some postal literature. But hey, you know, that's what I'm doing. I can't complain about that. So there's part of me that thinks like, boy, did somebody actually hear that and be like, oh, we need to drop an episode? Probably not. Oh, dude, and one more thing. So when I was listening to the Colorado State Association of Letter Carriers podcast, it's bipartisan buzz. There was an interview with Brian Renfro, and it was back in January. And dude, listening to this interview, so some of the things that he talked about, like, oh, the contract is like pretty much done. You know, we're just working out some final details. And that was in January. Now it's the end of June. So it's the same story from all this time. And he talked about how there, one of our legislative priorities, our top legislative priority is the Protect Our Letter Carriers Act. And that he is absolutely going to put together a national day of action where we will make sure that, you know, our legislators hear us on this. And we're all going to like band together and do this big thing all on one day. I don't remember that happening. And boy, he sounded so sure of himself. Maybe it happened and I just missed it. Maybe I was on vacation that week or something. But I do not remember a national day of action that was put together at a national level from our union. And then another thing that he talked about was that he was planning on releasing episodes of You Are the Current Resident weekly to keep people informed. And maybe he meant weekly like W-E-A-K-L-Y. I don't know. But since then, he has not released a single episode of You Are the Current Resident. And it is now the end of June. So much for that. And he even said in there, like, oh, they make it really easy on me. They got all the recording stuff set up. All I got to do is just sit down in front of the microphone and talk. But he ain't about that life. So I'm going to keep talking, and but not for this episode. That'll be the end of this episode. So thanks again for listening, guys, and I will catch you next time.